Welcome back to Iron Game Chalk Talk. I'm your host, Ron McKeefrey, and today we have a treat for you. Cynthia Sass is in the house today, and Cynthia, for you that don't know Cynthia, she is basically been there and done that when it comes to nutrition. She has been on almost every major TV show, Biggest Loser, Today Show, on and on and on. She's been in the major media. She's been the editor for Prevention Magazine. Writes, speaks all around the world when it comes to nutrition, and she's worked with the NHL, MLB, and collegiate level as a nutritionist as well. So she is a great resource for us. Today she talks about the four things that kind of are the biggest obstacles when dealing with collegiate or professional athletes, day-to-day type things. She does some great how-to information, and it's very easily implementable into what you got going on. So sit back, enjoy today. Today is my twins' birthday, 13 years old, and so it's an exciting day all the way around. So enjoy. Okay, welcome back to Iron Game Chalk Talk. I am here with Cynthia Sass, and like I said in the intro, there is pretty much nothing that she has not done when it comes to nutrition. She's been on pretty much every major TV show, magazine. She's worked with pro teams. She's done it all, and she's awesome. And what people don't know really is that Cynthia is the first nutritionist that I've ever worked with. You know, we worked together at South Florida, and she's a phenomenal person. And a phenomenal resource. So, Cynthia, welcome to the show.
Thanks so much. It's so great to connect with. We go way back, don't we, Ron?
No doubt. Well, you know, for the people that don't know you, Cynthia, can you tell a little bit about how you got into nutrition and then kind of what you're doing now?
Sure. So, you know, I knew when I went to college that I wanted to study nutrition, and partly because my mom struggled with her weight. You know, and so I saw her kind of doing the crazy diets and the ups and downs and things like that. And then my dad had an interest in it from a disease prevention standpoint because his brother had died of colon cancer. He had a lot of cancer in his family, and he got into nutrition to prevent cancer. And I was fascinated by that you could prevent a disease by how you eat. You know, just as a high school student thinking about that, it was like, wow. And then I did track and cross country, so I was always pretty active, and so there was that sports nutrition aspect to it that was kind of really just at that time starting. There was a little bit of interest in, wow, how you eat could affect your performance. You know, it's like now that's really a mainstream thing, but back then it really was kind of a fringe thing. So I went to school to study nutrition, and I happened to have an amazing professor at Syracuse University. Her name is Sarah Short, and she was really into sports nutrition. She worked with the football team at SU. She was really one of the first professional sports nutritionists, and she taught a sports nutrition class. So she kind of, encouraged me to become interested in that and saw that there was a future in it. And so my first job out of school, I stayed at SU to do my master's in nutrition as well. And then the university hired me right out of that program to work for the school. So I did everything from working with some of the teams at the university to working with, you know, just students going into the residence halls and going into the fraternities and sororities and doing nutrition programs. And then I started a private practice on the side. I started working with local runners groups, then some high school athletes, and then, it just kind of grew from there. And then I left Syracuse, went to Florida, and then eventually worked with you at USF. And then when I was in Florida, someone recommended me. It was actually a trainer had recommended me to the Philadelphia Phillies. And they were looking for a nutritionist to come in while they were in spring training down there in Florida. That was the first pro team that I worked with. So,
well, you've done, you know, the field has grown exponentially just in the time that you've done it. And what I've, you know, what's following you in your career, you know, you've been a free agent in a lot of respects. You've been able to get involved in a lot of things, you know, with, you know, if they read your bio, they'll know that you worked with both the Phillies and the Rays when they were in the World Series, you know, at that time. Yeah. They had some divided loyalty there, right?
Yeah, it was amazing. Actually, yeah, the Phillies recommended me to the Rays. So that's how I started working with the Rays. And, you know, who would have known that they would end up playing against each other in the World Series? It's amazing.
That's right. But now you've enjoyed kind of getting involved in a lot of different aspects of nutrition. Everything from going to Prevention Magazine and working more with general population to working with the athletes to the Biggest Loser and working with, you know, special populations. You know, what aspect of nutrition do you enjoy the most?
You know, I think what I really like the most is when people not only get results in terms of, you know, losing weight or changing their body composition, but just in how they feel. I mean, I've had people tell me, whether they're professional athletes or just, you know, people who are trying to juggle a full-time job and family and everything else, when they say, my energy is through the roof, I feel 10 years younger, my mood is so much better, I sleep better. You know, I've had pro athletes tell me that they have less aches and pains after changing their diet. They don't have to take as many anti-inflammatory medications. I mean, it really, the power of what you put on your plate is pretty amazing. So for me to get that feedback from someone, whether it's someone who read a book I wrote or an article I wrote or a blog I wrote or someone that I get to talk to face to face, that feedback for me of the results that someone got, especially in terms of their quality of life, is what keeps me, you know, energized.
No question. Well, you know, this is something that goes way back to even the South Florida days where, you know, when trying to educate the athletes, you know, you really kind of get, you're really kind of up against about four major things, you know, and one of those is skipping meals, you know. You try to send the message that, you know, food is fuel and you need that fuel to be able to, you know, I always use the analogy that, you know, you're either a Mack truck or you're a Ferrari. And if you're not putting any good gas in, it doesn't matter how polished you are. You're not going to be as effective. Talk a little bit about some of the things that you do when you get these pro athletes coming to you, and it's no different for the pro athlete versus the college athlete, where they may be eating. They might have woke up, gone and worked out, hit a practice, did meetings, and now it's 2 o'clock and they're getting their first meal for the day. What are some of the things that you inform them or instruct them to do?
Well, I really try to explain how the body works in relation to food, and I find that most people really don't know. So, you know, you're really not taught that. When you think about where you learn about nutrition, you know, maybe you learned about the food pyramid or something like that vaguely, but in getting into the nitty-gritty of how the body works and why it does need to be fed on a regular basis, a lot of people don't get it. And I think the reason that they don't get it is because if you think about your car, if your car runs out of gas, it stalls by the side of the road and you can't keep going. But you can skip meals and keep going, you know. And so people kind of think they can get away with it, or they don't really need to eat, or they can get by without eating because their body is still going to move.
Right.
And so what I tell them is that your body's highest priority is always fuel. It's always energy, because when your cells are actively working and they're having to perform, whether it's just walking down the street or training or competing, they have jobs to do. All your little cells have jobs to do. And if you are not feeding them by giving yourself meals and snacks, then it basically has to make something out of nothing. So you have to create fuel where there is no fuel. And how you do that is you go into your reserves, which unfortunately partly is muscle tissue.
Right.
So you are eating away at your own muscle to supply the fuel that your cells need because you're not eating.
Right.
So I remember that professor that I had in college who I loved so much, Dr. Short, I remember one of her slogans was, if you skip a meal, you're actually eating liver. It's just your own liver that you're eating. But you know,
good,
that
yeah.
when athletes start to hear that they're eating away at their own muscle,
right.
You know, I mean, that they don't want to do that. And I think they get it and they start to think like, okay, if I could prevent that just by eating something that I stick in my bag and just, you know, take 5 minutes to stop and eat, that's going to be a good strategy. It's going to be a smart strategy. They're going to get more out of their training. And then, of course, they're just going to perform better. And,
right.
You know, again, getting back to those results, the feedback from people, I had a, you know, in my private practice, I work with athletes in all different sports. And once I had a professional tennis player who was just really exhausted all the time, tired all the time, would come home from a really tough day of training, fall asleep on the couch, sleep for several hours, just sleep through dinner because he was too tired to get up and eat. And when he started fueling his body, not only did he perform better, but he would say, now I have so much energy that when I come home, I eat dinner. And then he was out going to yoga and doing other things because he was fueling himself.
Sure.
So, you know, a lot of people think that you can burn, if you don't eat, that you'll burn body fat. It would be awesome if we just burned pure body fat if we didn't eat, because then we could just not eat until we got to whatever body fat percentage we wanted to be at,
right,
and we'd all look amazing. But it just doesn't work that way. You can't burn pure body fat. You always have to burn a combination of carbohydrate and fat. And if you don't have carbohydrate available, you use muscle tissue and convert it into carbohydrate to provide that substrate for your energy.
Sure.
So, you know, number one thing is, the biggest mistake that you can make is actually canceling out a lot of the results from the hard work that you're doing by skipping meals.
Right.
So even if you just have to pack some simple things that you can stash in your bag and bring with you, things that are non-perishable that you don't have to really prepare, you know, whether it be something like almonds or sunflower seeds, unsweetened, preservative-free dried fruits, cereal that you can, whole grain cereal that you can eat with your hands, you know, things that are really simple. Bars, there's a lot of good bars out there. There's a lot of not so good bars out there too. But you know, that's a really very simple thing that you can change that can go a long way to getting better results.
Well, it's counterproductive. You're working so hard in the weight room, building that muscle, but then you turn around and you're eating away at it. And a lot of times what ends up happening is your body composition goes up. Your body fat goes up because of the lack of lean body mass. So, great point. Now you get the opposite of that. You know, you get the guys that if they do eat, you know, when they eat, it's typically fast food, you know.
Yep.
And I think, you know, might even go back as far as you and I, but, you know, one of the contentions I always make is that athletes, they're going to eat fast food. It's going to happen. You know, what are some of the strategies that you use with your athletes to say, okay, eat this, not that type strategies? Or what are some ways that you've effectively kind of said, you know what, this is a lot more time efficient rather than, you know, because that's the biggest issue. It's easier to go through the drive-through. You know, this is, you know, what are some of the strategies to make things more time efficient from a meal preparation standpoint that you've used as well?
Well, one thing is with fast food, I recommend whether they're doing it right next to me, sitting next to me, or they're doing it on their own, to go to the website of the fast food places that they eat at and read the actual ingredients in the products that they typically order. Because a lot of people might look at the nutrition facts numbers, you know, calories, fat grams, sodium, whatever. To me, that's less important than what actually went into making that product. And when they're reading it and they can't pronounce it, I can't even pronounce it. And I have all kinds of training in biochemistry. And, you know, it's stuff you don't recognize it. You don't know what it is. It's something that was, you know, manufactured and it's not natural to the body. Do you really want to put that in your body? And how I put that in perspective is your body is kind of like a big chemistry experiment. You know, everything that you put in is going to have some sort of effect. Now, everything that we eat that's all natural, we eat, you know, fruits, vegetables, whole grains, you know, chicken breasts, all that kind of stuff. Those natural substances are going to either perform a job or they're going to become a structural part of the body. They're going to repair and heal cells. They're going to build muscle mass. Every cell in the whole body has a pre-programmed lifespan. So when that cell's lifespan is up, it needs to be replaced with a new cell. So what you're eating is going to provide the raw materials to literally rebuild and maintain and heal your body from head to toe. So when you put things in your body that can't perform a job and they can't become a structural part of your body because they're artificial and they don't really have any role in the body, to me, that's like polluting your body. You know,
sure.
You're just putting something in there that really does not belong. And so I think when they start to make that connection, there are some other things that they can do for, you know, saving time that don't necessarily require going through the drive-thru. So, you know, one would be that there are a lot of fast casual places like Chipotle. You know, I am a huge fan. I have no formal relationship with them. I get no money from them, but I recommend them all the time because honestly, it's really not that much more expensive for, say, an athlete who's on a budget. It's not that much more expensive than a fast food place. It's pretty quick, but it's real food. Right. You know, they have that food with integrity philosophy, which, you know, they don't use the hormones and the antibiotics in the meat. Yeah, right. They source local vegetables. You know, that's great. There's a lot of places like that. And then the other thing is, at home, there's a lot of shortcuts that don't sacrifice nutrition. So, for example, you buy a dozen organic eggs. That is a very quick, very high quality source of lean protein.
Right.
And then things like instant brown rice, or at places like Trader Joe's or other grocery stores, they have these pouches that are basically pre-cooked whole grains where all you have to do is reheat them. Right. So they're ready to go. So it's not going to take 20 minutes or 40 minutes or whatever. Wild rice, things like that, I keep those on hand all the time. Frozen vegetables. They are typically actually more nutritious in many cases than fresh vegetables, because they're frozen at their peak ripeness when it locks in all their nutrients, and freezing doesn't destroy those nutrients. And so when you have a fresh vegetable that's been picked, the minute it's harvested, it starts to lose nutrients. So if that vegetable travels 1,200 miles from where it was grown, you know, from California to the East Coast or something like that, it's going to lose some nutrients. So you actually get a lot of high quality nutrition from frozen vegetables, and all you have to do is just steam them or maybe put them in the microwave. I recommend keeping little jars of things like pesto, where you can just toss a frozen vegetable with a little bit of pesto, so you add a lot of flavor to it, but you only have two ingredients that are necessary there, and you don't have to wash, chop, peel, really do much work there.
Sure.
So if you scramble up some organic eggs, you have some instant brown rice, and you have some vegetables tossed with pesto, you have a very quick meal that is infinitely more nutritious than a fast food meal.
Right.
And it really just took you a few minutes and actually probably saved you some money.
No question. We would always recommend, you know, because the guys love the barbecue, you know. Every one of them seem to think that they're the master chef, you know. So what we tell them to do is, you know, use those Sundays when they're barbecuing to throw, you know, 5-10 extra chicken breasts on the grill and do exactly that. You got your Rubbermaid tubs, you throw a chicken breast in, you throw some frozen vegetables in, mix up some brown rice, and you got a great meal. And most of the time, these guys will eat the same thing every day even. So they can set those up. You know, the other strategy the guys use quite a bit is the supplement strategy. You know, I'm going to eat one meal, that's where all my money's going to go, and then the rest of the day I'm going to eat, you know, every supplement under the sun, you know, or they're constantly searching for that magic pill at one of the supplement stores. What are some of the things that you tell your athletes regarding supplementation?
Well, definitely there's no one size fits all. You know, there's very few things that I feel like everyone across the board needs to take. So it really should be an individualized approach. But, you know, there's so many. There are literally thousands of products out there on the market and thousands coming out every year. And it's such a huge industry. And, you know, a lot of times you do see those claims that sound too good to be true.
Right.
I probably have to say the majority of my time, a lot of times, is spent reviewing products, where people will bring something to me and say, what do you think of this? Should I take this?
Right.
Sometimes they've already started taking it before they've asked me about it.
Sure.
And so one of my recommendations is, don't put anything in your body until you've run it by someone that you really trust, someone who has no affiliation with the product, is not going to make any money off the sale of the product, you know, that type of thing. Because, you know, I have a couple of databases that I use. One that I really like is the Natural Medicines Comprehensive Database. And that's a great resource for me to look up an ingredient or look up a product. And it will tell me any research that's been done, that's been published about the product or about the ingredient.
Oh, that's great. Yeah.
Any potential contraindications, like who shouldn't use it based on any condition that they might have, an existing condition, what it might interact with. Does it interact with any other supplements or any other prescription or over-the-counter medications? What are the potential side effects or risks? Do those risks outweigh the pros, the potential? Like, maybe there's a little bit of good research on something, but it's kind of preliminary research and there's some potential risk. I can talk through all that with someone and say, listen, you know, if you take this product, here's the benefit that you might get, but here are also the risks that you might incur. And then I can often recommend something else that will give them the same benefits that doesn't have any risk.
Right.
And on top of that, a lot of these products are really expensive. So you could be spending your money on really high quality food instead. And, you know, supplements generally can't capture. There are a few supplements that I do really think are valuable and I do recommend that are very difficult to get enough from food. So, for example, like probiotics, it's really hard to eat even if you eat yogurt, which a lot of, you know, a lot of the athletes I work with don't really like it, or it's not convenient. It's really tough to get the amount that you can get in a supplemental form. Vitamin D is something that's been really interesting in the research about the amount that we might need. There was some very intriguing research about even Hawaiians who spend about 20 hours a week in direct sunlight, most of the time without sunscreen, still had low blood levels of vitamin D.
Wow.
So that's something that, you know, may be tough. You know, it's found in very few foods. If you don't eat seafood, or you're kind of moderating your seafood intake because of worrying about mercury issues or whatever, you might not be getting enough from your diet. So there's some things that I'm not anti-supplement by any means, but I think that you really have to do your homework. You really have to look at all of this. You know, a lot of people do think if something's natural, it can't possibly be harmful.
Sure.
And, you know, there's a lot of things that are natural that are deadly, you know.
Right.
So it's, you know, it's getting too much of a good thing can also be a problem. I've certainly seen people who take vitamin C and they're taking so much vitamin C that they're having diarrhea because of it. And they don't make the connection that that's coming from getting too much vitamin C. Or even zinc, which can help boost immunity, in too high of an amount over time can actually suppress immunity. So there are a lot of things that people really need to know before they put something in their body. And then, of course, as there's the issue that some things may be contaminated. There's a great resource called Consumer Lab, where they regularly go out and test products and will, you know, independently test them to see if they have the amounts that the label states, and if there's anything in there that's not supposed to be in there. Sometimes they find contamination with something like lead. You know, lead's in the product and it's not supposed to be in the product.
Yeah.
Sometimes they find that a product might have, you know, 5% of what the label claims it to have in it. Other times they find it's right on target. So that's a good resource for looking at brands and saying, are these brands really living up to the claims that they're making and the quality that they really should have?
Yeah, you know, that's what we would always talk to our athletes about as far as the purity and the risk of a contaminated source. You know, that's a year of eligibility. And a lot of times, if you're a senior, that's it. You know, and so we talk about NSF certified manufacturing plants and those types of things. You know, I think what we'd always stress to our athletes quite a bit was, you know, we'd give them a test. You know, have you eaten breakfast 7 days a week? Have you drank, you know, 24 ounces of water or whatever, and give them, you know, let's try to fix these things first before we go out looking for this magic pill. You know, the other four thing that I fight quite a bit as a strength coach is, and unfortunate, you know, even with their younger athletes, is alcohol. You know, they get to college, they go out, and they binge drink, or you know, or worse. And, you know, you're dealing with that from a body composition standpoint. You're dealing with that from a performance standpoint. Let's talk your professional athletes or athletes that are 21 years or older. What are some of the recommendations that you give them when it comes to alcohol?
Well, definitely if you're thinking about drinking post-training or post-game, post-performance, eat first, because there's some research out there to show that alcohol can reduce your ability to replenish glycogen by as much as 50%. So even several hours later. So if you drank within the first couple hours, let's say after a game, and you really haven't eaten well, no matter what you eat later on, you still will not end up with the same level of glycogen the next day that you need to rely on for that sort of backup fuel to keep you going. But also, more importantly, it can reduce your ability to recover from performance and training. So the loss of strength has been shown by as much as 40% in studies where they've put people through some you know, fairly strenuous training, and then they've given them alcohol, or they've given them, you know, no alcohol, and kind of looked at the differences in strength. You know, that's pretty big, 40% loss. So if you're injured already, you might want to think about abstaining. If you're more prone to injury, you might want to think about moderating your alcohol intake. But if you're ever going to drink, you know, post-competition, definitely eat a really good quality meal first and drink a lot of water, get hydrated, and then maybe have a few. But I think a lot of people aren't aware. I've had athletes say to me, but is wine good for you? Or I heard, alcohol is, good for your heart. It prevents heart disease.
Sell anything. You
know, right. So, everything has pros and cons, basically. And a lot of it is about amount. The recommendations out there for alcohol consumption are 2 drinks a day for men, 1 for women. 1 drink is a shot of liquor, 5 ounces of wine, and 12 ounces of beer. Sure. So if you go above 2 of those for a guy, you're going above moderate consumption, and anything above moderate consumption actually increases the risk of a lot of diseases. And so, you're not necessarily, it's one of those things, again, it's like more isn't necessarily better, you're not lowering your risk of heart disease even more by having 5 beers, and you may be incurring that loss of glycogen and that loss of muscle strength that's really going to impact your performance the next day, especially in sports where you're training and competing day after day after day.
Right.
And you really don't get, resting and healing and recovering is really critical for those people.
Yeah, that's what I was going to say. That it's 40% of strength, for that session. It's not let alone the cumulative effect of a season,
Right.
And not to mention brain function and things along those lines that could be affected as well. So all those things go into factoring performance, And, and it's one of those battles that we all fight, not just from a moral or from a mentor type role, but, I always tell our athletes that we have 2 hours with them. They have 22 hours to mess up everything we just did,
Right.
And, that's the battle, is when I get you for those 2 hours, I don't want to be fighting a losing battle. And so you got to get involved with those other areas, in my opinion.
And one of those areas is sleep, and certainly we know alcohol can interfere with sleep or really good quality sleep. And there's just so much research coming out about the impact of sleep on immunity, on body composition, on appetite regulation, on, inflammation, which we know is detrimental to athletic performance. So
absolutely. Well, Cynthia, this has been awesome. You provided some great information there that we can all take and implement right away. I know you got your website, and you've written 5 books. Where are some places that people can go to stay up with what you've got going on? And then, I know you consult for teams and things along those lines. What are some things? This is shameless plug time. Where do you want to send people?
Okay. My website is just my name, CynthiaSass.com, like sassy without the Y on the end. but I do Skype consulting. I do phone consulting. I have, I do work with people long distance. So I have clients all over the country, athletes or other people who want to work with me who aren't in New York or L.A. So I can do that. And, people can just reach me also on social media. I'm on Facebook, on Twitter. I'm on Pinterest. I'm on all those. So if you go to my website, there are links, to all those things. And they're all really just my name. My Twitter is just at Cynthia Sass. And, but I really like interacting with people. I love getting feedback on the articles I've written or blogs or questions. I'm on Facebook every day. I answer every single question or comment that people post there. So I'm available basically, to connect with.
Well, no doubt. And I've been looking at the Twitter and the Facebook page quite a bit, and you put out a lot of great stuff on a daily basis even. So make sure you guys check that out.
I'm not one of those people on Twitter who says, I just saw such and such movie and it was great. I don't do that. I just share nutrition, fitness, health, wellness information. So I just want to be a resource for that. So I tweet about studies. I tweet about tips, different ways to have those healthy shortcuts that you little things that you can do. So it's really, I hope, valuable information for people and not just kind of, chatter.
No doubt. Well, I appreciate you coming on. Thanks so much.
Thanks, Ron. Take care.
A couple quick things before you go. As always, we will link up everything down below that was mentioned by Cynthia in the interview, all her social media and her books that she has out there. I know she would enjoy you guys checking those out. Also, I wanted to announce a couple of Football Strong clinics that we got coming up. Football Strong, basically what that is a camp and clinic initiative that I have where we put on a clinic for coaches in each state. It's a four-speaker conference where we put three college strength coaches in. They talk about each aspect of the annual plan. So one talks about winter, one talks about summer, one talks about the in season, and then we bring in an NFL or a keynote speaker to come in and talk about philosophy. We have some from the field demonstrations. So in the Detroit clinic on May 18th, Jim Kilbasso and I have partnered up on this, and him and I will both be putting on from the field demonstrations. Jim will do the field and I'll do in the weight room. And then in Baltimore on May 25th, Rob Taylor and I partnered up for Smarter Team Training, and he will be doing from the weight room, and I will be doing from the field. So we have some great speakers coming up. In the Detroit clinic, we have Aaron Wellman from Michigan, Blair Wagner from Eastern Michigan, Dan Nickel from Western Michigan, and then Ted Rath with the Detroit Lions. And then in the Baltimore clinic, we have Jeremy Scott. We have Jeremy Scott from Temple, Mike Brass from Navy, Drew Wilson from Maryland. And we're still working out the NFL strength coach or the keynote speaker, but another great event. So there will be more information to come on these. If you go to RonMcKeefrey.com /FB football, FB strong, MI for the Michigan clinic, and MD for the Maryland clinic. So FB strong, and then either MI or MD.